Good morning, Henk Kooi.
Good morning, Otto.
Henk, we are involved in this wonderful exploration which is called Mathemusics. It is all about an exploration of, can we use music and music notation to understand how cells in our body communicate? Because if we can do that, then we might have a means to understand health. Health would then be the harmony of the song of the cells in their ongoing communication. And disease would be the cacophony, the disrupted cell song, the disturbance in their cell communication. Because it is evident that the cells produce the materials which produce the body as a result of their communication. So we should stop looking at the body as physical, and instead we should look at the body as phasical, because basically it is the phase changes in the cell communication which determine the material phases by which our body is built. And in a previous exploration, I asked you if you could get to some ideas about the parallel of what we see in our body, where the first cell divides and divides again and again, producing the fractal, which is basically the core of our vegetative system, but also the center of our soul. It is the connection between our cell division decisions. And of course, our life decisions must be based on that foundation. Mm-hmm. So that this fractal of cell divisions, the first cell, the zygote, creating this fractal in time, is the basis of the integrity of our body. But can we see a metaphor for that in music? And we already started to explore that last time. I asked you, is it possible to get an understanding of the way a composer creates a musical composition? Because when you look at a musical composition, it is always put in a specific note, a key note. So it starts with a note, and then basically like the cell dividing, the notes go up, the notes go down. Once a note has been completed, a next note comes up, which is up or down. So essentially, a musical composition likewise is a fractal, which essentially starts with one note, and then it goes up and down, up and down, up and down, creating this fractal of what we know as the musical composition. Evidently, we perceive it in a different way, because when we look at the body, we are in the body. It's like we are on the surfboard riding the wave in time. So for us, it is logical that we are part of that fractal. It is what we are, what we experience. We are on the surfboard. But if we would be sitting on a pier on the coastline, we would see the surfboard and the wave come in and roll by. And that is seemingly what we experience in music. We hear the music, then we hear the next note, then we hear the next notes, and we hear more notes, and suddenly we hear no notes anymore. It is like a wave rolling by while we are standing outside of it. So yes, we are comparing something where we have the difference between the insider view and the outsider view. So in music, we hear that time fractal from an outsider perspective. It's if we make time slices through this seed unfolding to become a plant, to unfold to become a flower, pollinating the rest of the environment. While in our body, we are in it all the time. But yet, if we can see how music compositions are worked, created, composed, then that might help us understand better how in our body we can see all these cell divisions and the cell communications which result from these cell divisions as an ongoing symphony, an ongoing harmony, an ongoing orchestration of cell communications. And so that's where in the previous time you already said, well, if this is the topic, then let's first get some ideas cleared up. So that was neatly done in the previous recording.
Yeah.
And for now, I'd like to come back to that question. can we understand musical compositions in that term of a seed growing into a plant, or our first seed growing into our body, as the point turning into a fractal, but then interpreted as a composition of music?
Yeah, that's possible, but it's very complex, there are too many phases that are all included in the same process. So when you talk about one fractal, it's just one fractal repeating itself in endlessly. With music, all of a sudden you have thousands and thousands of fractals going through the cosmos. So by entering it in this way, I think it will be much too complicated. So I rather slice it down in certain pieces, let's say in keynotes, keynotes address.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I could give a keynote address on the facials, or the face goal, as you call it, let's say the key A minor, or on the key A major, and the key A major is actually and so all those keys, they have their minor and they have their major. So we could say that a key sharp is an uplifting key, so that's more with the peppers, with the dopamine structures, and the minors, they are more related to the inhibitors, or let's say major is the breakthrough. That's the autosympathetic system, nerve system. The minor is connected more to the. So if you play minor, you're actually playing for the parasympathetic nerve system. So then you have already two. But that's not the whole thing. So basically, in minor, you play for the parasympathetic system, but also a little bit for the sympathetic system, because you inhibit the neurons of the sympathetic system, all just by playing this certain key,
let me get into this, because what you're now saying is crucial. Mm-hmm. You say that before we can start to look at the unfolding of the note, we first need to understand how the first note that is being played, which is the key note of the whole composition, is already selected because it has a specific effect on the listener.
Yeah.
And so there there is the majors and the minors. Mm-hmm. So they elevate or they depress our experience of it. So right from the start, that first note already sets the way the user, the listener, the participant is going to be affected by that music.
Yeah.
What is the neutral note?
Yeah. So let's elaborate a little bit more on this. You say at the first note, but that's actually not the case. So a composition works more or less like an orgasm. So you bring it to the end of the piece of music. So if it's played in A minor, then the end Schlussnuss, the end accord will be a full A minor accord, and you don't play this in the beginning, because then you have already orgasm and then the attention will be gone. So you build this tension also when you play in minor, but then it's more an inward feeling, an inward going inward, an inhibition feeling, but not really an inhibition, because we just let go on the inhibition. So there are a lot of contradictory things that happens in music, especially when you use the voice, then it becomes even more or much more difficult. So as long as we talk about orchestras, then it's easy to discern it, or more or less easy. For me, it's easier to discern than with the voice.
Hank, I'd like to connect up to this, because what you're saying now is that rather than looking at the first cell creating the body, we should look at the first cell being created from the sexual union, the sexual fusion of all our parents. And then the metaphor of the orgasm falls in place totally. So you say that essentially all of our ancestors in a way come together by our great-grandparents, our grandparents, our parents, and then our first cell.
Yeah.
But that in music, essentially, it is that sexual fusion fractal which creates the first cell, which is the issue,
and
rather than the first cell unfolding into the body.
Yeah, and all later compositions.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, by DNA. So that's actually such an ultimate moment, and that's always so when you have, for instance, everybody knows the song Barcelona from Freddie Mercury, I guess, and they sing Barcelona, that's an orgasm. It's not an eargasm, but that's an orgasm. It's a musical orgasm. And so that's a creating moment, and of course it's a breakthrough moment. So it's a sharp, I think it's more or less an F sharp, if I guess it. So you can have that expressive Barcelona going outside, but you can also have it inside. I can't sing it so easily from the heart, because I don't have an image that everybody knows, and I don't even know an image of it at the right moment. But for your interpretation, so it's actually also in this kind of pop music, classical music from Freddie Mercury, you see that it's building till he's the first time he's singing Barcelona, Barcelona, and then it gives shivers down your spine, etc., etc. So the orgasm and the shivers down your spine is more or less the same. But now it's not the shiver down your spine. It's not a specific sexual feeling. It's just one of the sexual feelings you can have during an orgasm or prior to an orgasm. So now let's go back to where we started in the key A minor to keep it like this. So the key A minor.
Just before you do that, what would be the neutral note? Would that be the A? Would that be the C? What is the neutral frequency in the body, where there's no hormone activation, let's call that.
There is no. The only neutral tone is death.
So silence is the neutral tone.
No, not at all, not at all. Silence is even broadband noise, so a broadband sound.
Yes, so that would affect all the chakras. That would affect all of the hormones, all of the molecules of the hormones.
Applied silence. Silent sounds, applied silent sound, that's even more stronger than any of those compositions we make. But that's not music, that's silent sound. And silent sound is also music, but not really. Because actually it does not exist in your ears. It only exists in the electromagnetic spectrum. Only, I think it's broadband, it's going beyond this. So the most powerful experiences I had with music and sound is the silent sound. So what I learned a lot of to a lot of actors, singers, opera singers, etc., is how to use a silent sound. So after you've sung Barcelona, and now I made silent sound of Barcelona, and that thing, as most of the time people start to clap and disrupt or completely destroy the silent sound. So the real thing, that's the silent sound that comes behind it, and every skilled or now let's say not every, but the better skilled musicians, they know how to do that. So actually they freeze the movement. So if you're playing a violin, you nachlauschen, you listen after it, after the music you listen. What happens after the music? And that's why they are musicians, because they listen to what they have done to the cosmos. And the audience is not smart enough to understand it. So, but they are very enthusiastic for what is already done and for the silent sound that comes. But then to suck that in, that's very hard for North European and North Americans. But in Finland and Japan, it's very rude just to clap after just 1-2 minutes after you did the performance. It's very rude to clap, because you destroy this subtle refined quality, and that's the oil we are all. That's the holy oil of the Holy Spirit of music, actually. So by clapping, you actually say, "Oh, I don't know it at all. I'm just I'm just a cultural barbarian. I just clap." And yeah. But you're always welcome to clap, so that's not really a point, because all musicians are also insecure. So as soon as you start clapping, we know that you liked it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's separate the psychology from the physiology.
Okay. Yes.
In the body, we can see that both of them are connected, because the molecules that create the physiology are also the carrier wave. Let's call it that, for the psychology. You've now made a distinction between active silent sound and passive silent sound. The active silent sound would be seeing the ship leave the harbor after the musical composition has been played, and the wave train trails out into the universe. But you would also have the passive silent sound before any music is being played. When you go into an open field, it has been empty, no musicians for a while. Then you would hear a silent sound, basically the full spectrum vibrations. And then you say, well, whatever musical note you play, you will always already activate one of the specific chakras. And you already mentioned earlier that there is a correlation between the notes in the octave and the chakras in the body. So you just brought back to the fore that in fact there is no neutrality in music. You will always start with a note which will affect one chakra or one organ system rather than another. So you already change the activation or inactivation of the listener. I just want to get clear that in the note that you choose in the octave, you already specify which chakra system will be activated. So I'm still looking for the understanding of the music as a fractal unfoldment. Because once you have selected that note or that chakra or that hormone system or that specific change of involvement in the listener, then you can still select if you will go into the major solutions of that or the minor solution of that, and thus activate or inhibit that specific level that is being addressed by that specific note in that group of listeners.
And then they are together in this field like a like a choir. So actually, sitting and listening to music, your audience changes from listeners to in a collective choir, and they enhance and they make this collective field much stronger with their attention. So that's the way it grows.
Okay, because I'd like to go into the direction which you try to veer away from, which is that you say, well, every musical effect will be different, distinct.
Yeah.
Okay, taking that for granted, then I would still like to come back to this notion of, okay, so you have a specific ground note or key note which plays throughout the piece. Mm-hmm. It will be at any of the specific chakras. Let's just ignore that it will be on one chakra or the other.
Yeah.
Let's also ignore that it is activating that chakra level or inhibiting that chakra mm-hmm. level by playing major or minor chords.
Yeah.
So it essentially says that any piece of music will always activate the listener in a specific way and excite them or inhibit them by the piece of music.
Yeah.
But then I would still like to come back to the architecture of that music in the way the composer then uses that understanding of that specific note, which is like the backbone of that whole musical composition, and how the composer then drapes the ribs, let's call it that, the limbs around that backbone, in having the notes go up and down, which on our body would be for the ribs left and right, but that there is a building up on that, let's just call it the spinal cord or the snake element mm-hmm. of the core of that musical composition. How then does the composer build a head and arms and ribs and legs onto that composition, making use of that fractal unfoldment?
Yeah, there is indeed a music theory about it. But so we are on a level that we have also to be very honest. So these theories, they are, let's say, some places on the map. But the places mm-hmm. on the map, they change during composition. But just to make music theory easily understand it, mm-hmm. it's smarter to think in this major and minor keys. So when a composer gets an opdracht,
assignment. Assignment.
An assignment. Oh yes, that's a word in English. Yeah. So when he gets an assignment to compose, let's in say a piece that you have to be happy, or a piece for a funeral. So these are different things. So then, only then the composer uses this kind of things. Okay. So yeah, when I want to have a good funeral and I want to have them all crying, that's for sure. I have to do something in the key A minor. When I want to have a big festivity where I need the breakthrough of Uranus, so the Uranus quality, then I would go for F sharp, like Beethoven most of the time did, and Berlioz and other compositions and Verdi. For every situation, so let's say you have a movie and something happens in a movie. I don't know if the listeners ever saw movies and movie scores. That's movie scores is music in films, in movies. And so if you, for instance, play the different music that doesn't apply to the story, you don't understand the movie. The story is completely messed up, although the people are exactly saying the same things. You can't grasp it anymore because the music is not supporting the story. Actually, music is dominant in film, no, in the movie. But since we are so skilled in cutting, we made the eye a little bit more dominant. So because we are such renowned cutters of movies. So we're even better than music. But then if you put a real composer on it, do the same thing, just as exact as the movie cutter is able to do it, then the music will be stronger again. But the old way of playing a different type of music under it, so let's say you have a funeral and you play the let's say something F sharp on, let's say the fifth of Beethoven, ta-da-da-da, ta-da-da-da. That's not a funeral, it's a new beginning, eh? And But then you have also a sharp and a funeral, you would automatically start composing in minor. And the key A minor is a very good good key. So if you sing about...
You seem to be farther away from your microphone. It's difficult to understand you.
Yes, okay. I put the microphone a little bit more here. Is this better?
Yeah, just keep it close.
Okay. If you want to make a song of your... of your love life that disappeared all of a sudden, the loss of your love, then you also take the A minor, and within when people are doing these things on stage, like in Holland it's called cabaret, I don't know, a instant comedian, that's not a real thing in Holland, because in Holland they also need to make a little bit more music. So instant comedian doesn't make music, but the cabaret people, they do also music. And then they, for instance, when they have this situation of loss, they always go to this A minor. And they've even made jokes and instant comedies about it, because they all do this, because it's a tearjerker, as you understand. That's a real English or American exposure. So, and a tearjerker is the best thing to do in A minor. So... And so then it's more easy to understand. So then the composer will say, okay, I stick to A minor because everything I do will be easy to put it in. If he would play this in D minor, that's much harder, because then they don't start crying, because they get stronger, because there's much more Mars elements are involved in D. And in the D minor, so it's easier to endure it. But with the A minor, then you are very vulnerable, and you're near to breaking, or you break. And in D minor, you don't break so easily. And so a composer knows this. So when it's And of course, you don't create this neurotransmitter. So in E minor, you just give people a lot of serotonin-like neurotransmitters. And it's easy to cry, because you feel so surrendered to the situation. Actually, you go to complete surrender in A minor. But if you want to go to complete rebellion and breakthrough, etc., etc., you go to F sharp. So, but these are just a few things that a composer knows, and it's called music theory. And it's a part of music theory and composition. So it's not the basic music theory. Then they don't even know this, but. If you're a composer and you're into movie scores, you better understand it, or you won't sell your composition.
It would be helpful if you could add a listing of these different flavors of the notes, as they're then used by these cocktail mixers of the film musicians. But I like to keep on coming back to the question which plays in my mind now. That after a composer has selected that specific key, in a way, I imagine that this key is like the line of the middle of the road. That the composer knows that this is the spinal column, this is the trunk of the tree, along which all the branches will be draped, and the musical composition will unfold. I'd like to keep bring you back again to this notion of once that musical key has been selected, and you already explained it would not be the first note, but it would probably be the last note that is being played.
Yeah, or somewhere in the middle, or you get it the first time, and then in the end you get it much better. Or it's depending on the composition. So if you have the overture in the beginning, and the overture is like the confiture of the whole composition, then you can hear already this complete end accord, just the ending accords, But normally you don't start with an overture, but you just start with an allegro just to speed it up, and then you have a slower piece, and then you speed up at the end, and then it's done. And in pop music, the most simple things are just played in one key. But the better music is also has a key change, but it's hard to play for musicians. So you have to be a better musician just to do a key change in a song. So to keep it simple, they stick also to keep it in one key and just make the chords a little bit more difficult. But if you, for instance, have a very well-known number of Cat Stevens, Morning Has Broken, that's also with a key change. And then it sings, Morning has broken like the first morning. Now, and it goes on and goes on. And then, that's the same key. Fit la 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 la. And so that's a key change in the song. And I also changed a little bit my voice so you can hear it more easily. So then you get a different feeling. So first he's staying with Morning Has Broken, and then the whole thing is coming to one piece with your creator or with creation, whatever you believe. So that's also a way to create the beauty of the song, and without this key change of Morning Has Broken, it would not have been such a hit as this one, because it's really a very renowned moment that you have this key change, and that's also what composers now and then do in a composition. But for instance, if you take Stravinsky, he's doing all the time key changes, rhythm changes, etc.
Compare that to like a massage of the body? Mm-hmm. That first you have a specific set of movements, and then you change to a different rhythm of movement or a different place of the body, yeah. So that a different part of the body is exercised, because that would be the equivalent of selecting a different key to work on a different chakra, to work on a different hormone system, to work on a different feeling of involvement.
Yeah.
Let me then come back again to this notion of the spinal column of the music with that key note. The musician would already know what key it is because it's noted on the paper. Yep. For the listener, it would be much more of a hide and seek. That keynote would not be as clear. As you said, it could be at the beginning, it could be at the end, it could be somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
How does the listener know that is the keynote?
Because then he sighs and says, I was waiting for this all the time. and he surrenders completely to the music, because that it's a way of building up tension. Eh? So this is the orgasm, you build up tension. And then finally, when you have this final chord, or near the end, eh? So you have this final chord near the end, most of the time in coda, eh? it's the end play. And then it starts to repeat and to repeat and to repeat. And in pop songs, then the repetition starts after that has happened. So so you have this end chord, and then you say orgasm, 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 and then fade, orgasm, fade, 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 fade. And so the relation between music and our spinal energy, our sexuality, it's a one-on-one. So if you talk about music, you talk about sex, and if you talk about music and sex, you talk also about intimacy. So they are all one. And if you talk about love and music, they are actually the same.
It's wonderful that you bring this close connectedness between sex and sexuality and music. Walter Russell, in his model of physics, basically said that sexual charges and discharges are the essence of everything that we see in physics.
Yeah.
So now you show that in music that is the same, and actually Walter Russell's concept of physics was very much musical and very much based on rhythms, mm-hmm. vibrations, coherence. So let me come back to this notion of, okay, so there is this keynote, mm-hmm. and the listener then feels or senses this keynote because everything sort of coming together, everything falling in place. Basically, that turns music more into a riddle than a hide and seek. The riddle or joke specifically make use of a linguistic trick that you can use words so that they seem to refer to one thing, and then with the twist of the tail, you discover that it had always been referring to something else.
Yeah.
But you were just misdirected. So you thought it was talking about one thing while it was always talking about something else. So yeah. It's that kind of switch of perspective which you now introduce into music, yeah. That the composer makes use of a hidden perspective, yeah. By which the listener does not know which keynote is being played by the performer, who knows very well,
yeah.
what the keynote is. So how does, again, for me that compares to what happens in the zygote, the first cell of the body. On the one hand, it originates from the sexual fusion of all the ancestors, selecting partners, going into this orgasm, which you've already described, and then producing a fusion fractal, which results in the first cell of your own body, mm-hmm. Which is that episode of the listener and having to listen to all of it, but not knowing what that keynote is. And then when that keynote is there, then you say the composer goes into repetitions on repetitions, like the contractions of orgasm and ejaculation.
Yeah.
And then that in its way creates the physical body by the fractal of unfoldment of the zygote. I keep on looking for the parallel between what happens in the body, the cell dividing, mm. and the musical composition with its keynote.
Yeah.
And in a way, you have already pointed out, we must discern between what happens before the creation of the zygote with the sexual fusions of with all of the ancestors, and what happens after the zygote starts to divide and the body is being built. And I try to find the parallel for that in music.
Yeah.
In a way, you seem to suggest that both aspects are there all at the same time. Are there examples where this coming together of the fusions is more clear in music? And are there examples in which this dividing up of the first cell in the forming the body is more clear?
Yeah, so now you're right on my territory. Uh-huh. So now I can tell you much more. Because what I've experienced is a little bit outside of all these rules of composition, etc. Let's say 10 years ago, I did for quite a few people pregnancy programs. And what is a pregnancy program? I'm working as a therapist, and I listen to the reverb of the voices and how they resonate on each other, male and female. So they have a relationship for a longer time, and they do this EVF in vitro fertilization, mm-hmm. and that's not working. And they come to me if I can do something about it. And yes, indeed, I can do something about it. But it's not easy. It's not easy. And there's an easy thing. It sounds very easy. So you match up the vowels and the consonants of the different partners. So when I start working with them, they, I do much more than only this. So it's just a part of what I do. So you have these partners; they are really dying to have a baby, and it will not work. So first you hear the despair in the woman and the man. So yeah, now we are not fertile, and we love each other so much, etc., etc. And you hear all the fear and the doubt, etc., etc. But that's not all. So after you washed away the fears and the doubts, you end up with the ancestors who have broiled, or how do you say, broiled, or their curse or their bad mixture that will not fit with the energy of the other. So so there's no there will be no fertilization, because the powers of shape, of vormkrachten, how do you say that in English?
Shaping forces.
The shaping forces don't resonate in the belly of the woman, and they are not really resonating between those people. And it's not that they are not that they don't love each other. They love each other, but the, let's call it, to make it easy, the composition of the ancestors don't allow that there will be a child be born. But sometimes it's easy when you put a strange guy in, and this child will be born, or this or the other child. But that's not the case. So they want to have the baby from their own man, from their husband. So then we get to substantial work, where all the demons of the past, of the ancestors, who are playing part in this, who have made a curse on this, and don't allow any fertilization, how to address them. And people are most of the time completely not aware of it, that it's such a harsh family constellation, etc., etc., because we love each other, and etc., etc. So now, to make a long story short, we're ending up so that they have to tune in and to tune out with each other a lot of times. So they and they're doing a lot of other exercises to really get deeper into intimacy, to have better orgasms, etc., etc., with each other, so that they feel much more on a deeper level comfortable and embeddable in each other. After they have done this, they come to a certain level. Then I say, okay, now I stand in between you, and now you're going to sing for each other. And then when they do so, the newborn baby climbs in my body like an angel, and then it's in my body. Mm. And then I say, okay, you can go now. I think you will have your children in half a year. Oh yeah, that you've been fertilized, and most of the time they will have their fertilization the next time when the fertile moment is there for the woman. And so I've done this repeatedly with a few people, but because it's such a distress with people, because you get in this ancestral thing and all the other stuff, and people can go completely berserk on it. So I'm very reluctant to take this kind of clients anymore. I'm too afraid of being sued. But it's very nice.
Yeah, you can work on your own fear, so you can do your own sing-song technique on that. What I'd like to compare it with is something which René Broekhuizen discovered for DNA. And it is such a wonderful parallel to what you just described. In his findings, there is something which is very well known in homeopathy, that our culture has gone through a series of diseases which locked our bodies, and it's called a methylization of the DNA. Mm-hmm. had the miasmata of homeopathy, gonorrhea, syphilis, tuberculinum, and what's the fourth again, they all were locked into our body because they existed as a disease which affected our species, didn't kill it, but at the same time was not resolved.
Yeah.
And so it turns out that these diseases, these miasmata of homeopathy, mm-hmm. actually create a frozen segment on DNA, which is called the methylated segments. So they are sort of frozen over, fixated.
Yeah.
And as a result, they cannot dynamically process the information as the normal, healthy, unblocked DNA would be able to do.
Yeah.
And he noticed that because he discovered that in his research on cancer, people needed to have these frozen segments in the DNA for cancer to be able to emerge. So that people who had the unfrozen form of DNA would not get the cancer, mm-hmm. while the people with the frozen forms of the DNA, the methylated DNA, would have the possibility of the arising of cancer.
Yeah.
Specifically because those frozen sectors blocked the processing of a specific kind of information, as a result of which it caused an interference field within the body, causing a disturbing environment for the cells in that region.
Yeah.
And that's something which is also recognized in neural therapy, where they have this notion of Störfelder, mm-hmm. Which is the disturbance fields.
Yeah.
And basically they resolve them by injecting lidocaine, which is a molecule which essentially discharges the local electromagnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
So when in the body there is an area where the electromagnetic circulation goes into a stagnant form, in computational system that would be called a do loop. It just repeats again and again and again and again and again, cannot get out of that. And cells which are in that kind of environment will just keep on doing again and again and again and again what they were doing.
Yeah.
Without regard to the context, and that's characteristic of the behavior of cancer cells.
Yeah.
And that's also why I started to look into mathemusics, because I realized that if vibrational patterns in the cell communication are the basis of these diseases, and if there is that relationship between DNA methylation, where segments of the DNA are frozen, then we must be able to find patterns of disturbance and the locking of vibrations in the body as correlated to disease. And this is exactly what you now describe for infertility.
Yes,
so
indeed.
What Brookhauser described for the miasmata, well known in homeopathy,
mm-hmm.
and what many people described as the factor of the disturbance field, the interference field in a body as a required context for the creation of, for example, cancer,
mm-hmm.
and the inhibition of cell integrity, integration, as is typical for cancer, but is also in its inverse form just what you described for infertility, then we see that we are here at precisely the core of the whole concept of mathemusics.
Mm-hmm.
That yes, we can describe the body as a musical composition, musical vibration, and yes, we can understand that there are areas where there are cacophony or even these locked in frozen forms.
Yeah.
And this is just what you now described in talking about the way people can then sing themselves out of their fears.
Yeah.
So that their fear free, and that they can as a result become open to the full processing of information vibration.
Yeah.
And when they do that within themselves, they can also do that with each other. mm-hmm. and as a consequence, life can flow through.
Yeah,
and that's a very clear example which you gave there. But I'd still like you to describe that in context of how a composer works with that.
Yeah, but first I make it a little bit easier on everybody's understanding, or maybe more complicated because of that. So what I said, when people could not get pregnant, and they didn't have the money to do this program with me, I said, go together to a choir. And when you sing in the same choir, the same thing happens, because this choir is a larger construction. And within 1 or 2 years, you also will be pregnant because of singing in a choir. As stupid as this may sound, but this choir takes away all those layer of this do loop, or the spirit of trauma, that's inhibiting the deeper connection and the larger scale connection, and it makes the cell, the sperm cell, much more embeddable.
And that also explains why many choirs find that the members of the choir find each other quite embeddable.
Yeah, because the choir is singing to a maximum embeddability. So,
which is of course also why the churches and the mystic traditions always used song.
Of course, of course. Without it, they would they would hardly have a tradition.
Mm,
so without all those beautiful song about a Messiah, we would not have a Messiah anymore.
Yeah.
we would get lost in that. But to get back to this spirit of trauma, because that's actually what a do loop is, and that's also what you see. And the spirit of trauma, you can hear, because in the spirit of trauma, music is not embeddable. Love is not embeddable in the spirit of trauma, because the spirit of trauma is based in fear. It's the fear paradigm, and you only have two paradigms. So you have the paradigm of love or the paradigm of fear. And music is love, so it's able to enter the paradigm of fear, but it gets rejected harshly. So if you think that it's funny to do, forget it. So it, but if you don't enter, just play around. That's easy, and then it works like a choir. So as long as it is not invasive, it works easily. But as soon as you make this work more invasive, so you really intrude the fear of somebody else with your love, then you have war, complete war.
Before everybody starts to believe that's so, let me give the example of what we did in the Dreamtime Healing concerts.
Yeah.
That is where people would come by, they would lay down, relax, and around them we would start with drums, then there would be didgeridoo, then there would be all kind of wind instruments, but at the same time, and at the end there would be singing bowls.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a washing machine. So the drums would basically shake out the dirt. The didgeridoo would be doing the vacuum cleaning. Then the shaking and rustling sounds would form the dissolving phase of it, and then the singing bowls would, let's say, do the ironing, press everything, let everything mm-hmm. fall back in shape. What we did there, we used the musical vibrations of the white spectrum so that the whole body could respond to that. There was no specific frequency was used, because all of the frequencies were used,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time body work was done. So that while the emotional charges led to emotional discharges in, say, the chemical side of the physiology, at the same time, most often seeing masseurs would look into their body and either work with their body or work with their aura to guide the charge discharges through the body, so that the psychological physiology would be supported and backed up by the physical physiology. Mm-hmm. So that the charge buildup in their body would be guided through their body and out of their body. Actually, we used a very simple shaking technique, which was basically while the people were laying down, relaxed, to hold their heels and then first slowly and gently move them from head to foot. First from shorter movement to longer movement, and then repeat it again, but from slow movement to fast movements. And then the same was done for shaking the heels from side to side, left to right. And then it would be done with the legs going in and out. Mm-hmm. So basically, from top to bottom, left to right, inside, outside, and then back to relaxation again. And so that's where we then had the ability to be able to dissolve these psychological charges, which you've just described, by giving the body a way out.
Yeah.
And so that worked very well.
Yeah.
And it is also, that's also at the core of Mathem Musics. Had these kind of experiences, that it is clear that when in the body there are problems in the cell communication, because there are areas where there's still charges build up, pent up in the system, doing these local circulation loops, basically isolating that part of the body from the rest of the body, mm-hmm. then it is necessary to tune into those vibrations of that local circulation. And as you say, that can bring out the full force of the locked-in trauma.
Yeah.
And people will experience that whole suppressed event, which they experienced, but they didn't know how to resolve. But by connecting it to the rest of the body, which is, in the way, by the way, what homeopathy does, it informs the healthy part of the body of the frozen state at some part within the body. What happens then is that the body as a whole can digest what was undigestible within that body memory. And kinesiology, applied kinesiology, actually does the same. It can actually zoom in to the locked-in memories, the frozen trauma, which can be very severe if addressed. But kinesiology, likewise, simply activates the whole meridian system. So when it tunes into that painful memory, the old trauma, mm-hmm. it at the same time activates the whole meridian system in its balance, which actually turns on the digestive system of food and information, because in our body that is the same. So that when this traumatic memory is being addressed, as you described, can take place by singing a specific note or adding a specific frequency into the body, as also was done by Thomas Thies and yeah. his sons. You find a traumatic experience, find the key note, trigger it, but then if you cannot turn on the metabolic system of the body as a whole yeah. at the same time, it can become explosive. But yeah. if you at the same time activate the body meridian system as a whole, and kinesiology simply does that by activating all of the meridians in their proper sequence,
yeah.
then the situation which was not digested before simply becomes digested. It goes into this washing machine of the digestive system. It is turned inside out and resolved. And it's beautiful how you describe that you do that with people who have fertility problems, mm-hmm. and it is very powerful how you very simply identify that, yes, it is indeed only the result of internal problems with dissolving old problems.
Old,
in fact, there
patterns,
is a counterpart
yeah.
to that, When I was in the hospital in the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, of course, one of the activities there is to help people give birth. And with my previous experience, I always told the women, just realize that if you've never given birth before, that doesn't matter. The body comes from a whole line of people, and all of the women before you have experienced birth because that's how you came to exist. Yep. So simply get out of the way, trust the body, and let it do its thing.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because there were women who immediately understood that. Mm-hmm. In a way, they went out of it. In fact, I once met a woman who every birth went out of her body and then came back into her body only after the birth had taken place. Mm-hmm. But there are women who in their life operate a control system, and they think that with their mind they should control their body. Mm-hmm. And for these women, always the birth becomes very painful, very traumatic, very stubborn event. Mm-hmm. Until they are so tired that they have to give up.
Yeah.
And then within minutes the birth can take place naturally.
Yeah.
So it shows that there is this direct link between the psyche and the soma, the mind and body.
Mm-hmm.
Which is in fact the core of the psychosomatic link that determines the way we live.
Mm-hmm.
And you describe that in the relationship between music, the endocrine glands, and the resolution of trauma.
Yeah.
So that the full cycle of cell communications can be restored. But now I would still like to come back to this notion of how does a composer use that? How does a composer use these specific notes and build these spiraling up, spiraling down? How does a composer use that understanding that there is the need to get that key note in place? And how does it create that massage of notes up and notes down around that, which together then create a musical composition.
A composer doesn't know that. He does it by accident, not by trial and error, but it just happens in the creation. You're just like giving birth, you don't know it, and let's call it a fractal thing. So these notes are channeled or whatever, but it doesn't come from anywhere. It just simply is, and you read and you grasp and you make notations, and then you're going to repeat it so many bars, and you know that after 16 bars you have to repeat it somewhere within the next 16 bars, or you have to do something because it's also math. So they know how to apply it, and Mozart had his way of math, Bach had his way of Kabbalah, and so they were all very much into Kabbalah and into for instance, if you take this Pythagoric comma, they're all working in nines, like architects also works in nines, and nine in the number nine is very important for them, and composers have also different numbers. For instance, 7 is also a very good number to play with. But if you then you're going to repeat 7, 7, 7, 7, 7, and you get a 7 composition. And for instance, Bach had one composition with his birth date and his date of passing away. So that's also very funny that he already knew 20 years before he died, which day he would die, because he had calculated it. But that's the way that kind of math goes. But nevertheless, you could also say that that's just because he thought he would die on that day that he died. And I can give an example of my great grandfather. Who was very sick, and they asked to God if God would give him just half the time that he have given the king Hezekiah somewhere in the Old Testament, and that was 15 years, and he prayed for 7.5 years, and exactly on that date 7.5 years later that he prayed that he died exactly on that date. That's just very, very, very funny to see that. Yeah, what is it? Is it belief or is it a self-fulfilling prophecy or whatever? Nevertheless, without penicillin, this man, because it was a time we didn't have penicillin, he would have died, because they said, "Now you better say goodbye, because you will die within a few hours." And he didn't die. He did a prayer and he survived. And you could say, "Yeah, blah, blah, blah." But nevertheless, it's also unlocking something or whatever. But. And that's actually the same thing that happens when a composer is doing his scores. You have a certain theme and you're going to repeat it. And then something new pops out, and that's something new. And sometimes you have to need to put it in a different key to make it work. Because you feel, okay, now in that key, no, let's change it. In which key it will work? Because you feel when you're doing this kind of composition that somewhere in the middle or at the 100 bar, you then, okay, but now this piece is going to die, and it's not a moment. Music is not allowed to die, and so don't die when the music is still in you. But music can't die, because there are some artists who are able to let the music die, and so you can easily die with the music. They play that. That's called Thanatos music. And then you play most of the time in minor, and most of the time you just play minor keys to get the parasympathetic system flowing, so that you can die, because as long as the sympathetic system is dominant, you can't die. And just when this people play the music and somebody just clap their hands, the sympathetic is out and they can play another hour to get them to play them to death. Yeah, so it's but it's a very nice way of being played to death. So it's not it's not killing or something. So it's not active euthanasia. So don't get me wrong, but it's just a way. How this music is handled, so you can wait for 10 or 20 weeks before you die, because you cannot get my mother died also in that way. She could not surrender, and so she had taken away her bowel, and so she knew she would die very soon, because they said, yeah, you will die from it, because it's not you're too old to survive this. And she said, yeah, okay, come on. And but she didn't allow me to do this music. I didn't ask it exactly also, but
she was okay. So nice. You're talking here about musical euthanasia,
yeah,
which is sort of the extended form of musical relaxation.
It's not a musical relaxation, it goes beyond it. So
yeah, that's a deeper form of the same principle, that you can actually guide the body processes to deeper forms of tranquility.
You
can go from the organ level to the cell level, in the same way that when we sleep, we fall asleep in the sleep cycle. In the daily time, we are focused on the environment, close the eyes, then the body is pronounced. At the deeper level, the theta level of brainwaves, you go into organ level, then the deepest level, the delta brainwaves, you're at the cellular level. So you're now saying that composers can use that transition to bring people from the outside world to the body world, to the organ world, to the cell world. And if you can use it for euthanasia, you can also use it for revival and healing. So this is a very deep level of understanding of music, which is precisely at the core of why I started to explore this whole concept of math music. And you're really putting a lot of issues in place in a very clear and lucid manner. And now again, by showing that with music you can address those levels of organ functionality, cellular functionality, so you can cool people down, calm people down, physically, emotionally, but also at the soul level and even at the spirit level.
Yeah.
And which brings me back to that question, composers can seemingly do that. You've just brought up the notion that composers are a bit like masseurs.
Yeah.
That they don't do that consciously. That they need to do that by their intuition.
Yeah.
And that also means that composing is an art, not a science.
Yeah.
You need to be involved. You need to feel in your body what's going on. Instead of describing it.
And to hear it in your head. And so the music is in your head. Or in your body, and then all of a sudden you hear it and you say, oh, this is so beautiful. Yeah. And then you have to write it down.
Yeah. But what I would like to do is go a level deeper than where you are taking us now.
Mm-hmm.
Because evidently a composer is somebody who can feel in his own, her own body how these vibrations work. A composer is able to understand the pattern of those vibrations to lead it into a musical massage which other people can be part of.
Yeah.
And a composer is then also able to express that in a musical composition which an orchestra can play. But what intrigues me most is that musicians, composers, they have this notation by which everything which you have described as the intuitive, internal feeling and sensitive process is suddenly in an objective, external, say, dead level of reality, a musical score.
Yeah.
And that is why I have this interest in mathemusics, that in the musical notation, there is this footpath, the trail of the footsteps in the sand on the beach of the composer who has being able to internally process these frequencies in the body, in the mind, in the feelings, in the emotions as a musical composition, which is now in script. Yeah. So that, yes, there is a way to describe these internal processes which the composer feels as an external sign or symbolic language of the music notation.
Yeah.
And so I would still like to explore this further. I'm not sure if we can do that at this recording session.
Probably not, because we're running...
We're close to the time that we allotted for that. So then let me bring us to a sort of summary conclusion and leave it to you to round it off. What we've addressed this time is that, yes, there is this link between the musical score and the musical sensation. So on the one hand, the composer can combine that but bring that out as a musical score, which the director of the orchestra can then use to bring coherence between the musicians in the orchestra, who can then use the musical instrument to create a pattern of vibration which individually is just part of something that they co-create together as a whole.
Yeah.
So yes, we do have the possibility to create a field of vibrations around the orchestra as a reflection of what the composer sensed within.
Yeah.
As a result of which there is this bath of sounds which is, let's call it, a replica of what the composer was feeling, but also what the composer was digesting, what the composer was looking for, what the composer was, let's call it, thinking at the feeling level.
Or decomposing.
it's a metabolic system.
Yeah.
So it's anabolic and catabolic.
Yeah.
It's the major and the minor keys. So we do now have a very explicit connection between what happens in the body at the level of cell communication vibrations and what happens around the orchestra as a musical composition.
Yeah.
I still would like to get a better view on how the composer is able to transcribe what happens as a feeling hologram within into this linear code of text jotted down on paper.
Yeah.
In a way, it might seem something like the DNA replication system.
Yeah.
The DNA, on the one hand, is the blueprint for the whole body, but on the other hand, the DNA is just a simple string of code which creates the coherence, the memory of a pattern of vibration. So to conclude for now, in today's story, you've addressed the different aspects around the musical composition, that in fact the musical composition is unfolded by how it affects the hormones, by how it affects the players, by how it affects the music hall around us, and so on. And that as a result, the musical cocktail is something which is like a puzzle or like a riddle, something that needs to be digested. In a way, it's like the whole meal on the table, which you can only take in bite by bite, and then you still have to chew it, swallow it, digest it before it can become part of you. We also talked about that same metabolic system as an instrument by which old memories can be resolved and even infertility problems can be resolved. That the simple recipe, the cure for that, the therapy is simply joining a choir.
Yeah.
That still leaves me with the question, can we get a better insight on what is going on at that level of the musical script? What is contained in this whole series of bars, which, if it weren't on paper, would be just one long strand of, let's call it the DNA,
mm-hmm.
Which starts at one point, which ends at the other point, and in between, it does this unfolding of that hidden key note by a series of outward and inward spirals.
Mm-hmm.
I would still like to hear you talk more about what happens at that level, because for me, that is that fractal of unfoldment of the first cell informing of the body. It is also the unfoldment of the seed informing the flower and the perfume that comes out of it. And it is also the principle of digestion, in which experiences can be unfolded, digested, and incorporated.
So
I'm really glad again with what came up in this session on Mathemusics, because we are a fundamental step further into understanding what happens in that translation from the inner experience of the composer to the outer experience. We've seen the parallel between massage and healing and even life and death.
Mm-hmm.
But I would still like to get a better understanding of what is the role of that musical score, and the way a composer makes use of that musical notation, because the better we can understand that, the more easy it will be to understand what happens in our body in those terms. And I'd really like to see if we can actually come to a kind of musical notation.
Can I pick in for
what
a
happens
moment?
In the body? Yeah, certainly.
So actually, it's quite simple. What you see on the musical scores is the musical landscape or the musical field, or let's call it just a landscape with hills and sea and mountains and rivers and lakes. It's all there, and that's the notation for it. It's just a notation, and how you walk through this musical field, it's completely yours. But the composer had his field had this landscape in mind, and how you wander through this landscape, that's you. How you walk through the Netherlands. That's up to you. You can walk from the coast to the German border, or you walk to Belgium, or you go to Groningen. it's up to you. And you have a completely different experience in this landscape called Holland. And then, but that's the composition of Holland. So it's just where you are with your neurotransmitters, how you will receive this music or this landscape, how you will enjoy it. And sometimes when you're a little bit depressed, you will, although it was a completely sunny day that was in the landscape, but if you are depressed, you will still receive it as a cloudy, foggy day, cold and wet. And yeah, it's really a very wet country, I feel. And other people who are more in an uplifted mode will receive it as a, oh, what a sunny country. Yeah, it's all year through good weather in Holland. And so it's just about your, how are your neurotransmitters organized and balanced, how you will receive a landscape or a composition like that. So that's just to give an image, and then also an image to understand how complex it is, just to say this is this and this is that, and the composer only created this movie, and actually you make the scores, you make your only your own instant composing under the movie features. You see, you are the composer of this music. There is no music under this score. So it's your response on the movie or on the composition that's creating the whole thing. And that's very funny if you understand it. And that's also why this instant composing is so very important. So if you have a little child singing a song, tussen de wortels van de bomen liggen kinderen stil te dromen, and they sing this kind of children's songs, it creates a very GABA safe feeling. And but if you have a child with autism or safety problems, they will automatically reject it because they will respond opposite to this. So that's also so difficult to say, yeah, for everybody works in the same way. No, completely different. But if the person is open to receive, then it will be more or less the same experience. But if there's not an openness, if the mind is not open to receive it, then there will be a lot of investment in rejection and putting walls between it, and yeah, and then they will say, no, this is not this kind of music, can't work like that. But that's because people build their own walls against it, and the music is able to penetrate the wall, it's getting over it, but then still, if you don't want to receive it, you can't receive it. So if the spirit of trauma is involved in your experience, it's so harsh to get through it. But Norbert Vele, a colleague of mine who is also an expert in resonance, he just gave people a gemstone. He put the gemstone, it's a little bit too simple to say, but it's more complex, but he just gave them a gemstone, put the gemstone on the speakers, and he asked, which kind of music do you not like? And then he put the music on that he didn't like, and then he started crying, oh, so beautiful, so beautiful. So that's all about resonance. So if the resonance is there, your wall is gone. You can't hold that wall anymore.
Yeah, and what you describe now is the key of Mata music, so that basically in people there will be locked in states which have not been resolved as yet. And what you said, people can be in an internal frozen climate, and then the composer can provide them with a flowery landscape instead.
Yeah.
And healing music, as you said, will not most often be canned kind of prefabricated music. Instead, it will need to be improvised at the spot in a moment, which is something which is always characteristic of Indian music. It combines the pre-canned version with a local attunement in the moment.
Yeah.
As a result of which, the composer then can do that transformation of bringing something which is locked in, leading it out by the process of digestion. Which is precisely the whole key of the concept of math musics. And in that sense, the music notation, as you described, it's just a language. It is just an alphabet. And it's up to the composer to be able to write an eloquent story or just journalism or prose or just a simple lie.
It's more than an alphabet. It's already a landscape. So it's a pre-conscious landscape. So
I'd like to go into that, because if the musical notes are the letters of the alphabet, mm-hmm. Then the words of the composer, there was a time, a musical program talking about the musicules, which mm-hmm. is basically a combination of notes associated with different kind of feelings. And I'd really like if next time you could speak about that. How the composer uses the letters to make words, how the notes are turned into musicals, the musicals are used to make melodies, the melodies used to make compositions, as the transition from letters to words to sentences to stories.
Yeah.
Because that seems to be the key.
Yeah.
To understand what is actually being done in the art of composing. Because, of course, I want to reverse engineer that so that we can understand the story of our body as a series of vibrations which can be brought to key musicules which are interacting and all are based on the notes.
A musical that already attracts my Thanatos music. Eh? So you play on these musicules to let all these musicals dissipate, etc., etc. So that's a very, very easy one. And if you go to the disco, you're also playing with these musicals, with the pheromones and all the other stuff, climbing together, so that there has to be something procreated.
Yeah.
Or somewhere an orgasm is near in the future, or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Look forward of talking to you again.
Thank you very much for the story yet again, and also for so much helping forward this whole understanding of math and music.
Yeah. Thank you for asking.
Thank you, Hank. Till next time.
Okay. Till next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.